This is Like Mind, Like Body, a podcast about the surprising ways our thoughts and feelings can impact our physical health. I'm your host, Laura Sago, and on each episode, I'll speak with researchers, physicians, and ordinary people who have incredible stories to tell about the power of the mind-body connection. This podcast is brought to you by Curable, the company that puts evidence-based chronic pain therapy right in your pocket. A pro tip for listening to this episode, if you are not already there, you can head to curablehealth.com/grace and see some pictures and exclusive content that go along with the episode. And with that, let's dive in. Have you ever woken up with a random pain in your back? How worried or afraid do you think you'd be if that pain didn't go away in a few hours? What if it didn't go away after a week? How many WebMD searches and sleepless nights do you think that you'd rack up if that pain was still there a full year later?
I don't know what tomorrow will bring, and most days I feel I'm walking the line between heaven and hell, and lately I don't know which one is me.
The woman who's singing this song, her name is Grace Tyson. She's a musician, songwriter, entrepreneur, and activist, all of which are parts of her identity that got shoved to the side after she woke up one day with a stabbing pain in her back. A pain that stuck around for the next 7 years. Today, Grace has a pretty good idea of where that pain came from and why it kept getting worse. But it took her nearly a decade to get those answers and find a way to gain control over it and take her life back again. But to fully understand what happened with Grace's back, we have to rewind a bit. All the way back to when Grace was just a little girl.
I've always been a very curious child. I ask a lot of questions. Anyone who knows me knows that. But I am the youngest of five. I have four older siblings. And I have always been a people pleaser. I think being the youngest has been a lot of whatever my older siblings or my parents say, I just go with it. Part of that is my personality. I'm pretty easygoing. And part of that is just you learn how to fit into a family dynamic. So growing up, it's like I got straight A's. I was perfectionistic. I was super nice to everybody. But I always had a lot of anxiety. Looking back, it's like anxiety has been a huge part of my life. I can always remember waking up with that kind of like sick to your stomach feeling. But because I am somewhat of an achiever and perfectionistic, I just learned how to like muscle my way through it. And so that was like doing sports and riding horses and taking like AP classes and kind of just always pushing down my emotions. But I also think like, you know, 20 years ago, nobody really knew how to talk about emotions in a way that it was, I don't know, like acceptable to be emotional.
This is a really common experience, not just for people whose bodies go on to develop chronic pain or other mysterious symptoms, but for any human. Grace is not the first child to put a lot of pressure on herself or to start experiencing early signs of anxiety because of it. And it seemed like she was doing all the right things to handle this too, channeling her anxiety into positive outlets like sports and achievement. But what Grace didn't know at the time is that this way of processing her emotions by just stuffing them down simply was not a good fit for the way that her brain was wired.
The majority of chronic pain, you know, a lot of research is finding that the majority of chronic pain is not caused by physical problems in the body, but learned neural pathways in the brain.
This is Alan Gordon, one of the most prominent pain psychologists in the field of chronic pain and the director of the Pain Psychology Center in Los Angeles.
Everyone who develops neural pathway pain has kind of like a foundation of hypervigilance. If you grew up in an environment where you didn't feel entirely safe, you know, maybe you were just a sensitive kid, or maybe your parents would argue a lot, or maybe, you know, you had a mom or a dad that was really anxious themselves. And maybe it's something as simple as like, you learned early on that certain emotions were okay. So when those emotions come up, your brain is like, danger. Something came along to make this primitive part of your brain feel unsafe. And as a result, you know, as an adult, there's kind of a hypervigilance there.
The centers in Grace's brain that are responsible for processing fear were already displaying signs of hypervigilance in the form of this constant low-level anxiety. And as these brain centers were learning how to handle the world around them, they also learned that emotions were scary, which is a problem because as a sensitive child, Grace experienced intense emotions on a pretty frequent basis. But there was one place where emotions didn't feel so scary to Grace.
My whole life, music has been my outlet for my emotions in letting myself be emotional. And like, even when I was little, reading stuff that I wrote about like, whoa, this was deep for a, you know, 10-year-old. We did a lot of music with my family. At literally every holiday, we sing, we play guitar. And so that was also a huge part of my life, is performing and learning how to just like put on this face and be Grace and be, I don't know, that like fun, outgoing, loving person.
As she got older, Grace started to take her music more seriously. She started recording and playing shows, but it didn't feel like enough to be making music as an emotional outlet. She wanted to do something bigger with it. And one day, sitting in her dorm room, she discovered what that something would be. She came across an article on the internet about human trafficking, and reading about these victims impacted Grace on a very deep level.
I just remember sitting at my computer and crying and being like, I don't know. I didn't know that this happened in the US. How did I not know about this? And so I became really passionate about finding out more about this. And I think, I don't know if you know the Enneagram, but like my personality is like a helper, a befriender. And so when it comes to like humanitarian things, like I'm all in, and that's really coming from a place of like, I genuinely care about people and want to help. And so I dove in head first, and my best friend and I started a nonprofit called Songs Against Slavery, where we put on benefit concerts to help nonprofits that were fighting sex trafficking in the front lines get money and get awareness. And so freshman year of college, it's like I was diving into one of the most atrocious and horrific things someone can experience, in my opinion. And being someone who didn't know how to separate my life from theirs, it's like I started taking on all of these other traumas and meeting survivors and learning their stories. It's like I now was like, that was a weight that I was carrying.
It was a heavy burden to carry for a brain that was already set to high alert. Grace spent her college years thinking about these victims every day, trying to find ways to raise money and help them as best as she could. And the impact she had was incredible. To date, Songs Against Slavery has raised nearly $400,000 to aid in the fight against sex trafficking. But for Grace, the intense focus on something so horrific day in and day out also came at a personal cost.
I woke up one day and had like fire in my lower back that would just like spread, and then started to spread down my legs. It was pretty baffling to me. I'm 22, I'm a junior in college, and I can't even walk. Like, I had to drop my classes. And so coming from like being this like happy-go-lucky person to now having so much pain inside of me, it was a lot. And but again, I just like sucked it up, and I didn't talk about my pain with anyone other than my family, and I rarely let myself cry about it, just because that's what you do, is you stuff down your emotions. And so it of course got worse. And so my dad's a doctor, and so we went to the drawing board of, you know, chiropractor, acupuncture, starting medication, just like the normal route you go through with doctors. And they found a herniated disc. But also my symptoms were so like complicated to the doctors that it wasn't like this clear-cut case of, if we do surgery, it's gonna help.
This was all happening around 2012, a time when spine surgery was still very popular, but more and more data was starting to show what Grace's doctors warned her of. It was unclear whether spinal fusion surgery was actually helping patients with back pain. According to a lot of research since that time, the answer in most cases is no. And many spine surgeons, like Dr. David Hanscom, believe that these procedures shouldn't be performed in the case of back pain at all.
We generally don't know where back pain comes from exactly. We do know very clearly that disc degeneration has nothing to do with back pain. So arthritis, bone spurs, bulging disc, herniated disc, ruptured disc degeneration has nothing to do with back pain. And this is where spine surgery, probably 70%, should not be done. The metaphor I like to use is going to a dentist. If you go to the dentist with mouth pain and you don't know where the pain's coming from, and you start doing random procedures, of course, it's not going to work. Yet, we're doing probably 400,000 or 500,000 fusions this year for back pain, with the success rate being about 22% to 24%. And we also know that if you perform surgery for back pain that's chronic, you can actually make the pain worse 40% to 60% of the time. And I see that every day. So your chances of actually getting worse from a back fusion for back pain are somewhat double the chance of success.
I'm not sure whether Grace and her family knew about these exact numbers going into the procedure, but they did know that it would be a risk. And just like thousands of other families have done, they decided to move forward anyway. So just before her senior year, still in her early 20s, Grace underwent two-level spinal fusion surgery.
It's a very traumatic experience, and like having not really had any surgeries up to that point, like being in the hospital for a week and going from literally laying in a bed to learning how to walk again. And there was just like so much that like that started to create this like fear. So then I felt like I was way more anxious than I used to be, and was probably struggling with depression, but I wouldn't like let myself name it as that, partly because of my personality and being stubborn, but partly because I didn't know that it was. Mm-hmm. And so the doctors told me, like, in a year and a half, you're going to be pain-free, you're going to be walking again, you're going to be fine. And so, of course, in my head, I'm like, perfect. Like, we'll just latch on to that hope. But now, on top of everything else, I have all of this fear around medical stuff, because everything seemed to be going wrong. So went into my senior year, finished it, and so now we have this nonprofit. It becomes a nonprofit, and my co-founder and I moved to Nashville, Tennessee to run it. And so it's a year and a half past my surgery, and I'm in so much pain still. Like, feels like the same kind of pain that I've been in this whole time.
The surgery had failed. Not only was Grace experiencing the same pain as before, but she started experiencing severe health anxiety on top of it all. And unbeknownst to Grace, all of this stress, the medical anxiety, the emotional pain of the failed surgery. It was altering the way that her brain processed and responded to physical pain on a neurobiological level. In other words, all of this was setting her danger system on even higher alert. Before long, that started to take a massive toll on her mental health.
I got to the summer of 2015 and literally just broke down, like had a massive breakdown. And I couldn't sleep at night. I had so much anxiety. I was crying all the time. And my co-founder was like, "Are you okay? Like, what is going on?" And I just, again, I had no language. I hadn't been in counseling. And so I talked to my sister, who has been a huge, she's 6 years older than I, and has been like a huge advocate in our family for counseling and for mental health and getting help. And so I found a counselor in Nashville, and we just started to like unpack all this a little bit, as best as you could without knowing the connection between the mind and body.
Right.
So I started antidepressants and started therapy, and while I felt like I had more of an outlet, I still was in this crazy chronic pain. And so I remember actually coming home that summer and just bawling to my parents. And this was probably the first time I'd actually like let them know I was still in pain. I don't really think they knew between like my first surgery, and this was now like 3 years later, that I was still really struggling with it because I didn't talk about it.
Those first few years after surgery, Grace stuck to the emotional processing patterns that she was familiar with, muscling through. No complaints, no burdens to place on anybody else. But that was about to change. After that breaking point, Grace became a lot more vocal about what she was going through. She started sharing parts of her journey with chronic pain on social media. She wrote vulnerable, moving blog posts about how she felt and how hard all of this was. She got a really positive response from doing this, and for the first time in a while, Grace started to feel empowered. By January of 2017, Grace was fully vocal about her story, and she was ready to take another risk, a risk that she would be sharing with her fans and followers along the way. Here she is in a podcast interview from 2017, talking about what that next move might look like.
So we found a back specialist just a few months ago who, this is what he does, is he looks for what's wrong in failed back surgeries. He basically said the fusion's a little crooked, and so my bone isn't growing properly around it, and that's why I'm still having so much pain and much leg pain. And so to get to this place of we are looking at it to have to do another surgery, and there's so much risk in that, and there's no, he's not guaranteeing an outcome. So it's just funny because I found this out 2 weeks ago.
That was two weeks ago.
Around the same time as that interview, Grace also made a blog post about what she was going through. It said, "To be frank, I don't even remember what it feels like to be pain-free anymore. I don't remember how to think about sitting in a car, getting up from bed, taking a shower, going to work, going to the store, or doing normal everyday activities without having the very next thought be, how can I make this less painful for my back?" As I write this, I am laying in a hotel room in the middle of Indiana, recovering from yet another invasive medical procedure for my back that left me with spinal headaches, intense pain, and nausea. A procedure that confirmed I am definitely going to be needing another major back surgery in less than a month. I told myself after my first back surgery I would never do it again. And yet, here we are. As hard as it was, Grace and her family decided to move forward with the second surgery.
The first night of surgery, like, I could remember, like, all of these bells constantly going off. My breathing was like getting lower and lower, and I just didn't react well to the anesthesia. And so my parents were in the hospital with me, and it was like every 10 minutes the bells would go off and the nurse would rush in and be like, "Grace, start breathing again, start breathing." And my mom was like, "I just never," in that moment was the first moment I realized, like, I could have lost you.
When the procedure was finished, Grace still had a long road to recovery ahead of her. She had to use a walker, then a cane, then she had to wear a back brace for 3 months until she could support herself again. But in true Grace fashion, she decided that the show must go on.
So we had this show coming up in Nashville, which was like 2 months after my surgery, that I was supposed to be singing in. And it was my EP release show. It was a benefit concert for a nonprofit down there. It was a big deal. And so I literally did it with my back brace on and just was like, again, muscling my way through, being like, "I'm good, I'm fine. This is really hard, but I'm gonna be okay." It just kind of felt like I couldn't take a breath. Like I couldn't catch my breath.
I found a video of the show that Grace is talking about on her Facebook page. And as I started to watch it, I realized that I have actually seen this video before. I looked it up before Grace came into the studio when I was just scrolling through some of her old posts. But the first time that I watched it, I didn't even notice that she was wearing a back brace. But now that it's been pointed out to me, I can see it. It's there, blending seamlessly into this black jumpsuit, looking a little bit like an oversized belt. You would never know by looking at her or listening to her vocals that she was anything but cool and collected. And it's actually baffling to watch how much she just held it together on stage now that I know what she was going through. But even though she kind of masked it on stage, this time around, Grace was not shy about sharing what she was experiencing anymore. Here she is just a few months later telling yet another podcast host about how she was feeling post-surgery.
I read this article the other day about this chronic pain that you've dealt with for years, and that's hard. That's really hard shit. It really, really is. Like the pain even today, like it's still, it's yeah, still every day.
Yep. Every day. My last surgery was this past March. And so it was a pretty big back surgery, and you know, they don't promise after two back surgeries, they say you're not going to be pain free. You know, there's not really a, it's pretty rare. So it's just learning how to manage it, and it's learning how to say no and how to say the best yes.
After her second surgery, Grace told her story even more freely. She was determined to find purpose in the pain and wrote article after article with titles like "Brave Enough to Let Chronic Pain Be My Greatest Teacher" and "Back Pain Has Changed Me for the Better." In a strange way, chronic pain started to become this really positive part of her narrative, something people looked up to her for. And whether she was promoting her new music or her nonprofit, she often got introductions that sounded like this. Slavery.
It's amazing that she's able to juggle both of these incredible ambitions, but it's even more impressive when you learn that Grace battles chronic pain every single day. In this conversation, we talk about...
In the rest of the interview, Grace goes on to talk about her music and her nonprofit, but the conversation always circles back around to pain. She tells the host that it's like having a toothache in your leg. It's just always there, and there are very few moments where she isn't thinking about it. I asked Grace to look back on that time in her life now and the story she had to tell. Here's what she had to say.
Before, it was this narrative of, I think, two things. This is going to be something that I'm going to deal with for the rest of my life. There isn't a solution. And I need to learn how to cope. And for me, that was like learning how to find joy in it. But I think the other side of that was this, like, I don't want to say like, woe is me, but this almost like, look what I have to deal with every single day, but I'm still accomplishing all these things. Like this weird identity that has taken me a long time to see now of like, people look up to you because you have chronic pain, but you're also running this nonprofit. And I think that was probably the biggest one. And so I think it's a little bit of that victim mindset that I was in, that like, yeah, that this was happening to me and I had no control over it.
I think Grace is being a little bit hard on herself. I can see where she's coming from, but listening to these old interviews, I hear a really strong woman who is being vulnerable about a difficult topic in the best and most authentic way she knows how. She doesn't come across as a victim at all, but maybe she thinks that she did, because that's how she felt on the inside. I don't know. In any case, there was a downside to making this narrative about her pain such a big part of her life, one that Grace had no idea was happening and didn't intend at all. By placing so much focus and attention on her pain, Grace's brain was unwittingly growing the pain inside of her. Dr. Beth Darnall is one of the top pain scientists at Stanford University. Here she is explaining a little bit more about how this works.
In the realm of pain, what we know from many, many different scientific studies that involve neuroimaging of the brain in individuals who have chronic pain and also people who are healthy, if our attention and our thoughts are focused on pain and how awful it is, when we have a hard time thinking about anything but the pain and we really feel at the mercy of it, what happens very clearly and physiologically is that when we place our attention on the pain and when we're very much ruminating on it and worrying about it, we light up the same regions of the brain that are involved in the processing of pain itself. And so we are literally growing pain in our brain by how we place our attention and our thought patterns. And ironically, nobody wants more pain, but if we don't understand how these pieces fit together and if we're not using the right skills, we are unwittingly increasing our pain.
Even though Grace's perspective on pain had been as positive and empowering as she knew how to make it, this was still happening inside of her. And the summer after her second surgery, Grace wasn't doing any better. That toothache in her leg hadn't improved, despite everything she'd tried. She was having a hard time working, standing, sitting in a car. She kind of became resigned to the fact that her life was just going to keep getting smaller and smaller. Until one night, she stumbled across the work of a famous doctor from New York.
I randomly online was literally Googling like chronic pain YouTube or like how to get better when I found
how to get better. Please Google.
Please help me.
Help me.
When I found Dr. Sarno and his work. And so I remember listening to it and being like this first instinct of like, oh my gosh, this feels so much like me.
The book that Grace found explained Dr. Sarno's ideas about pain, and it's worth noting that it was written decades ago. Dr. Sarno proposed that repressed anger and the stress of certain personality traits, like being a perfectionist or a people pleaser, could create real chemical changes in the body and manifest in the form of physical symptoms, like back pain, for instance. I could spend a whole episode on the details of Dr. Sarno's theories, which ones have been proven true and which ones have been proven less true by modern pain science. But the core idea of his work, the one that drew Grace in, has been shown to be largely true. Emotions and thought patterns and chronic stress all have a much larger impact on the body than we ever realized. This is the idea that Grace wanted to learn more about. So she pressed forward on her Googling spree until she came across this podcast. the one you're listening to right now.
I just started listening to your guys' podcast.
Which you're on now. Did yeah, you ever actually, think?
It never.
This comes really full circle.
Really full circle. It's pretty crazy. So, and I just kept hearing interview after interview about people having these back surgeries and then doing this emotional work. And it felt like this inner conflict of, I have all of these authorities, doctors in my life telling me there's, I'll be in pain forever. Like, that's literally what they said after my second surgery. You'll be at a certain level of pain the rest of your life. And then I had this new way of thinking that made so much sense to me. And I felt like, oh my gosh, this is me. Like, I know myself. I know how much I suppress. But it was that battle between, like, almost like authority, like, who do I listen to? And so for that next year, I just kept listening to Curable, and I just kept, like, doing more research. And it was really Alicia Batson's interview that I listened to. And I was like, oh, she's in Nashville. I should go see her.
Dr. Alicia Batson is a double boarded physician and psychiatrist. She sees a lot of patients like Grace who have been to multiple doctors, received conflicting diagnoses, and feel like they have nowhere to turn. And she loves seeing these kind of patients because she used to be one. If you have time, you should go back and listen to Dr. Batson's own journey with chronic pain in episode 12 of this podcast. But for now, let's get back to Grace.
I remember just being in her office, and I came to her with a literal stack of my medical history because I was so tired of constantly re-explaining it to doctors. Yes. And at that point, I had just been in office after office, and I was still actually on pain meds at that point. My surgery was in March, and I stayed on pain meds for the next 2 years because I just needed a break. Yeah. And so when I saw her, I was like, this is my file. Good luck. And she just talked me through, like, you are a poster child for this treatment. I have full confidence that you can be pain-free. These are the steps that we're going to take. And I hope to never see you again. And it was just like, I remember leaving so baffled, like, what?
In the couple of weeks following her visit with Dr. Batson, Grace started to dip her toe into the kinds of work that Dr. Batson had recommended. She started learning more about the brain's role in pain. She looked into resources online and subscribed to the Curable app, where she started dabbling in a few of the exercises that would help her retrain her brain out of this high alert setting. But before she could do some of the deeper work, which involved reprocessing and letting go of these emotions that she had been pushing down for decades, life got in the way, and she started to pull back.
We decided to close my nonprofit down. I was just, again, still on pain meds. It was a very traumatic year of transition. I was just, again, like, in so much depression, anxiety, and chronic pain that I, like, couldn't even think through. And again, I was still taking pain meds. I was on, like, OxyContin, Percocet, like, the strongest pain meds, because I just was like, I need a break. And so I actually took 6 months off, and I went to Costa Rica, and in my head, I was like, okay, the summer before leaving, the summer after my nonprofit ended, I'm going to use this time and go home and start weaning off pain meds. So I was like, again, I was dabbling into Curable, but it's really hard with pain meds in the sense of it's an easy fix. And I wasn't quite sure I wanted to, like, dive deep into all of this trauma and all of these things that you know you need to do this work. So that whole, like, 6 months after, I would, like, do it a little bit, and I would still read about it. But again, in my head, I was like, do I want to let go of this identity? It was really like this identity crisis of, can I take this leap? Can I take the control back and realize, like, I have all the tools inside of me I need to get better? Mm-hmm. Or do I want to keep putting it in someone else's hands, like doctors or whatever? And so when I got back from Costa Rica, I was like, you know what? This summer, I'm going to, like, fully wean off pain meds. And for me, that was because I wanted a clear mind. Like, I wanted to make these decisions coming from, I hadn't had a clear mind in 2 years.
By the time Grace got back from Costa Rica, she was feeling a little bit more clear and a little more confident that she really wanted to do this stuff. She wanted to train her brain to respond to pain with less fear, and she wanted to make some changes to the way that she processed emotions. It was right around that time that she learned about Curable's groups program. It's kind of like a 12-week virtual healing bootcamp. You go through the program with a group of other chronic pain sufferers, completing online workshops, meeting with physicians together, and having weekly video calls to process and discuss everything that you're working through. And from the moment she heard about this groups program, Grace knew that it was for her.
When I saw the program, the groups being offered, I was like, this is it. I'm going to invest my money. I have a whole summer where I'm not working. I know I have to like dive in fully, or I'm never going to let go of meds, or I'm never going to let go of this identity, because it was just, it's like I had to go the fullest length of being all in, or I knew like I was just in such a depressed state of mind that it just felt like the programs were the perfect thing of, wow, I get to be in a group with 9 other women that understand exactly what I'm going through. It felt like AA for chronic pain. Like I literally, like I never met people on this level that understood exactly what it feels like to live with chronic pain. And so that was for me, like, this is why I'm going to take the leap. Because I also was like, I have nothing to lose. Like, if this doesn't work, great. Nothing else has either. What do I have to lose at like taking this chance on myself and on this work?
Grace signed up for the program and dove in head first. During each week, the group covers a different topic, like fear of pain, childhood stress, or self-compassion. But the topic of the very first week ended up being the most difficult one for Grace, letting go of pain as a part of your identity.
Of course, we cover the topic of identity. And
yes, that's the first week.
Yeah,
it dives straight
into the hardest part. And so that was probably for me one of the hardest, still is, like the hardest topics of how do I go from living with 6 years of chronic pain, everyone knowing me as that person of like, how are you? Oh, great. How's your back? Like, it was like this instant attachment, like another, it was like a child or something. It was like, everyone always asked me about it. And
it's like having a loss of a relationship almost. Like everyone asks about that person and you have to be like, oh, they're not there anymore.
Yes.
But the person is the back pain.
Yes, literally. Yeah. And it felt like this phantom arm because, and so in the, obviously in the first, I think it's the first week, you say you can't talk about pain with anyone for like a month. And that was so, it felt so freeing to me, but I was also like this inner crisis of like, oh my gosh, I have no job. I've built this like brand about chronic pain. What am I going to do? Which sounds so silly, but like when you're in that state of mind, it all feels so real. And so that for me was like learning about that and having to really like write about that. When you write about like thinking about what would your life be like without pain and like dreaming, like I had never allowed myself to dream what my life could be like without having this all the time. And so it was so freeing, but it was also like doing this work and to that level of intensity, which was incredible. It was the hardest thing I've ever done.
At this point, Grace had been doing a lot at once. She was weaning off pain meds and trying to work through this identity crisis. And she realized that if she wanted to get through both without giving up, she needed to seek out even more support. Since she wasn't working at the time and she knew that this would be her roughest patch, she decided to seek help at a nearby mental hospital. A lot of people who go through the groups program choose to seek professional help in addition, usually in the form of seeing a therapist one-on-one while they're doing this work. Grace is the first person I've heard of to layer another intensive program on top of the already intensive groups experience, but there's nothing wrong with that. She needed to do what was right for her, and her group was fully supportive.
The week after I came out, I remember Skyping with my Curable group, and it just felt like this relief of like, oh, these women, actually have known that I felt this way before I went, and now they get to see me after, and like they were so supportive and just so like, again, they just understood, because people with chronic pain know what it feels like to live with this thing that is hard to talk about with like other people that haven't experienced it. And it was like after that experience, in more going through the topics that you go through in the groups, that I finally was just learning a lot about like, oh, my fight isn't against pain. Like, one, my fight is against like learning how to like keep my heart soft, but also it's learning how to not be afraid of pain. Like, that is what for me has been like this massive game changer of like this radical acceptance, a little bit of, okay, oh well, what if I never get better? Like, what then? But then paired with, I now like know that I have the tools to know how to get better, and the language to explain to people as to like what it feels like, this neurological pain that's being created from my anxiety and my depression. And it just felt so empowering. It was like for the first time in my life with pain, the control was like back in my hands. And it just, again, like I don't know how I would have done this summer without those women. There would be weeks where someone was having a hard week, and then someone else is having an amazing week, and they're making progress with their symptoms. And so it was just this beautiful, like, even if someone was having a rough week, there was like this positive, actual real life changing of people's bodies, like getting better, that we were seeing, to be like, oh, that's real hope. That's not just like this faraway thing that like you can be pain free, but like actual seeing someone be like, I haven't had like my pain level is at a 2, and it hasn't been this low since I started, or just hearing it over and over again and being like, oh, this is what real hope feels like.
At this point, I can practically hear you all screaming through your headphones at me, asking one question. Did all this stuff work? Did Grace actually improve her pain? And by this point in the interview, I was kind of surprised that Grace hadn't brought it up too. So I flat out asked her, what was happening with your symptoms through all of this?
It's crazy, because it's like I went from taking all these pain meds, then I was down to like one a day. And what I started to realize was like, oh, my body knows how to like regulate itself. And so this summer when I was like going through this work, I just realized I started thinking about pain less and less. And it was because I wasn't in as much pain. And I think part of that is like the mental mindset of like, again, you learn how to not make pain your focus. You learn how to like live life and enjoy things. And the other part was like, it just slowly, because my, especially towards the end of the summer, my anxiety, depression was getting more under control. And then it felt like my body had this like opportunity. When I took off the pressure of healing, when I took off the pressure of being pain free, I felt like my body was able to like relax and be like, oh, okay, like now we can do this healing. And so I would say this summer when I started, my pain was probably at like a 7. And now on its worst day, it's maybe like a 3 or 4. But most days it's like a 2. Like it's not all gone.
Right.
But there are moments when I have it where it's not there. And so I think that has been really exciting. But that, it's exciting to me, but I'm also like, what's more exciting is I have these tools. To me, that just feels much more empowering of like, I've learned how to make pain-free not the focus anymore, which I think is critical to do this work and to not get discouraged.
I've heard this sentiment expressed from almost every person I've spoken with who has gone through the groups program. I ask them about their pain levels and they say, oh yeah, things are definitely better, but that's irrelevant to me now. And they go on to excitedly describe all these other parts of their life that they're excited about. Here's Dr. Batson, the physician who Grace saw in Nashville, explaining why this response is so common.
When you recover from chronic pain, you not only get your life back, but your life is better than it ever was. Because mm-hmm. in the recovery process, you learn so much about yourself and how you have been interacting with the world in a way that brought harm to you. And when you learn about these things, about these personality traits, about how you respond to stress, and about how to do this in a way that doesn't harm you, then it changes everything in your life. It makes every experience you have more enjoyable. If you're always racked with fear, self-doubt, pounding yourself with self-criticism, never feeling like you're good enough, always scaring yourself, it makes normal daily activities that should be enjoyable not enjoyable.
As we wrapped up the interview, I wanted to learn more about the new Grace. What did she think when she read her old blog posts about chronic pain? And what kind of a narrative did she have about it now going forward?
Even now when I look back at posts, I'm like, ooh, I cringe, because I'm like, I don't even write that way anymore. I don't even talk about my pain, actually.
Except this, on this podcast.
I'm like, this is the first time I've actually talked in depth about my story. Whereas before, I talked about it all the time. I told the story all the time. And when you asked me to tell my story, I was like, I don't even know if I remember how to tell it. Like, that's how much I haven't talked about it. Because it's just not, it's not my identity anymore. It's not who I am. I don't have to be Grace who has chronic pain and back pain. I can just be Grace. And that's so exciting.
That's very freeing.
It's so
freeing. You can figure out what Grace means.
Yes. I don't think anymore this is going to be my forever. Like, I now am like thinking about my life as like, I'm going to be a musician and I'm going to go on tour and do things that I never would have imagined even a year ago thinking about doing because of my pain.
One of those things that she's already getting a jump start on is, of course, new music.
I have started to write music that feels like this new me of like confident and writing love songs, like stuff that felt so vulnerable to me before. It's like I could talk about pain all day, but when you ask me about like my life, actually like love and feelings, like I would never write about that. But now it's like I have this opportunity to create a Grace that is bold and passionate and fearless. And while I think I was those things before, I never really, it's just always had this layer of pain over it where it's like, now I don't want, not that I don't want pain to be in this music, but I want this to be an expression of who I am now and who I am aside from having chronic pain. And so it's been really actually exciting. It's got bringing me a lot of joy to think about like changing my name and rebranding and having this music be so different from what I used to write, into just empowering music of this is who I am now and not apologizing for that, not people pleasing. So yeah.
Is there a particular song or lyric that used to feel very important to you as a part of your pain experience?
One song that I wrote was called Dear Heart, and I'd say this still applies to me now, but it was a song about learning how, like, to say, like, it's okay to not be okay. And while, like, that still applies to me today, and I have to remind myself that, like, it's okay to be a mess, it's almost like now this new music is this experience of almost like, it's okay to be a mess and living that out. Like I think before when you're in pain, it's like it's okay to be a mess, but quietly. And now I feel like it's okay to be who you are loudly and not apologize. Like I said, not apologize for it and not people please. And that feels like a really big transition into being okay, being emotional, being okay that I have a lot of feelings. Like that's what this work has taught me is I don't need to apologize for that. I don't need to apologize for my personality and the way that it works. Like, pain sort of makes you feel like you need to apologize all the time. I don't feel that way anymore. I am who I am. And if you're not okay with it, that's okay.
The day after I interviewed Grace, she went straight into the studio. She's recording more music as we speak. Music that she tells me feels a little bit more bluesy, with a bunch of raw emotion and a whole lot of this new Grace mixed in. She told me the sound is similar to this song, the most recent single she put out from 2018. The song, fittingly, is called Not Sorry.
I'm not sorry I showed up with my whole soul.
For links to Grace's music and behind-the-scenes pictures of her recovery process, don't forget to head to curablehealth.com/grace. Another great reason to check out that website is because you will also find some free goodies there from the Curable Groups program that Grace mentioned, including a full hour-long video of one of our advisory board physicians answering some of the most commonly asked questions about chronic pain symptoms. And if you loved this episode, don't forget to leave us a 5-star review and let me know in the comments. All of your feedback really helps us figure out what kinds of episodes you guys want more of. We were free to be you and me. You chose.